Welcome to another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Join us on our journey to tokenize the world. Let's roll. Welcome back to another episode of the Real World Assets Show. Today we have a special guest. We have Cynthia Huang, the CEO of DTravel. And welcome. How are you today?
Thanks, Travis, for having me. Really excited to be here.
Awesome. Or I should say this evening. I know you're coming in from Hong Kong and I'm at Consensus in Austin. So the beauty of connectivity. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, that's Web3, so right? All around the world.
Web3 around the world and telling the story to everyone that's tapped into the new digital world. So it's exciting. So I guess to start off, I know we've chatted a bit over the past 2-3 weeks and digitally and excited about this conversation. But for my viewers and just, I know DTravel is not a new project, and that's an exciting part of this new movement. And the acronym RWA really wasn't even a thing when you guys started DTravel. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting to have that hashtag now for RWA and to have that be kind of a little bit of a movement and more people kind of coming in and a bridge to this. Because clearly mm-hmm. you've already seen this before the acronym, before all the buzzwords. And just like to hear a little bit more about how you got into this, how DTravel started, and you know, just a little bit about Cynthia.
Sure, yeah. So I started my Web3 journey in 2017. Actually, it was probably before that. So my husband, who is an engineer, found out about Ethereum. So we had heard about Bitcoin and didn't really know much about it. It sounded like a scam, like people say when they don't know much about the crypto industry. But I think Ethereum he was really excited about because being a developer, he really loved the concept of programmable smart contracts. And so he decided to run an experiment where he built a bunch of mining rigs and we ended up having like 10 of them in our house. And he was trying to convince me to do this thing. And I started researching blockchain. It just seemed really interesting at the time, what could happen. And then fast forward 2 years, there started to be more, I guess, like consumer applications for Web3, which was still very early. Like CryptoKitties was obviously the first big one that kind of blew up. And being from Vancouver, CryptoKitties is in Vancouver. So it just felt like very connected to what we were doing and like seeing that unfold. And we wanted to basically onboard people into Web3 because, or crypto as we called it, because at the time, like our friends, we were telling them about crypto and they all thought it sounded really crazy. And at the time, everybody who got into crypto was doing so primarily through trading. So there wasn't really a big ecosystem of projects or utility back then. It was primarily you bought cryptocurrency and you traded it, you might hold it in a wallet. And that's like pretty much all you could do back then. Obviously, we're very lucky that there's a lot of things that you can do now. But what we saw was that people who were coming to the space and were trading, if they didn't know a lot or they bought a very volatile cryptocurrency, they would lose money, get scammed, and then want to exit the market very quickly. And obviously, that was not going to help with mainstream adoption. So we decided to launch a game that was a trading simulation game, so like a paper trading for stocks, and make it really easy for people to learn about crypto in a fun and gamified way. And we give away prizes for people who would build the best portfolio every week, and we work with different sponsors. And it was pretty interesting because like back then, the space was pretty small. And so you knew a lot of the people in the space. So like, you know, I talked to Devin, like the CEO of OpenSea. It was like, you know, him and his co-founder at the time. NFTs weren't really a thing. It's just so crazy to see how the space has grown. But we did that for a couple of years and unfortunately ran into some issues with Google Play because we got banned from the Play Store. But I think it was like a fortuitous thing that happened because then what ended up happening is a group of us started talking about how to design this vacation rental ecosystem that was decentralized and using blockchain. And my background is I've been a host for over 10 years. So it felt like something that was very personal to problems that I was experiencing on that side of things. So then we came up with the idea of DTravel, put together a white paper, launched the first version and the token in late 2021. And it's been almost, I guess, like 3 years since that day.
That's exciting. Yeah. And as I've told you, I've been aware of the project pretty early on. So in the 2021 timeframe. So as you mentioned, things come full circle. the ups and downs of the word, using the word crypto and the ups and downs of crypto still exist in 2024, yeah. as you know, but, and the scams still exist, although, albeit to a little lesser extent. And, you know, I've heard some quotes recently of, you know, crypto never misses that chance of shooting themselves in the foot. The Figure Market founder and CEO used that quote, so I'm giving him credit for that. But, you know, we've done a good job doing that, but we've also done a good job of moving in and moving a revolution forward of the, you know, the new financial markets and also a decentralized app ecosystem, you know, essentially the Google Play and the Apple Store of Web3. So I know you guys are doing that. And again, like you said, you were early doing that. It's not been easily or the road to kind of bridge that adoption, you know, or use Web2 tools to have a marketplace for you or have a marketing angle or a platform for your Web3 project isn't always easy because, as you mentioned, Google Play, you know, wasn't for it eventually. Some of that has moved along. Of course, even Google's become a little more open with things, as you know. But, you know, like you said, it's a fortuitous thing to, because it helps you to kind of realize where you need to pivot and where you need to kind of focus in harder. And I love how your background being a host, obviously, you know, I always like to hear those things. And I think listeners do too, of like, what's that like itch? What's that little aggravation that, you know, drove you to kind of invent something different? So that's exciting. So let's talk more about DTravel. You know, like you said, you're at a 3-year anniversary, roughly, and a lot has happened. Obviously, we had a fairly significant 2+ year bear market smushed in there. So tell me a little bit about where you are now, just kind of the overall ecosystem. Kind of let's start with just kind of the problem. You know, like you mentioned you had a personal you know, things that drove you to creating this, but what is the big problem you see this solving currently?
Yeah, so I became a short-term rental host in 2014. And when I first started, I was using Airbnb and I drank the Kool-Aid. Like, I loved Airbnb. My dream job was to work at Airbnb. You know, like, I was such a big advocate. I went to all the host meetups. I was like one of the super hosts in Vancouver and also one of the first. So because I also co-founded a forum for hosts in, well, it wasn't in Vancouver, but it was a global forum and it's become basically the largest forum today. But when we first started it, I think it grew very, very quickly because there was just such a need for people to connect with each other in this new industry that was quickly growing and a lot of new people coming into it who didn't really know what to do. So we were community leaders in Vancouver. And so there were a lot of events where they would invite us to and there'd be like VIP events and they'd want to partner, et cetera. So I was like very, very immersed in the Airbnb space. And I think for probably like until 2015 or 2016, they stayed very, very host-centric. And, you know, I still loved Airbnb. But what we saw happening was that over time, especially after they became a public company, they became way less, well, or just like not host-centric at all. And like even now, I think they're not guest-centric because there's so many guests who are unhappy with the experience also. And so they're not making either side happy. And for hosts in particular, which is my perspective, we have no control. So what happened during COVID was that there were mass cancellations and they basically forced hosts to take on all these cancellations and lose out on a lot of money. And I think that moment was when hosts realized that they really had no power and they couldn't rely on just a single platform, which is really good for us because that was also, I think, kind of like a watershed moment where something like what we were building became something really important and something that the market wanted because they wanted to diversify and start to have more ownership over their policies and also over their payments. Because whether it's Airbnb or Booking.com or VRBO, there's a lot of payment issues because they're the intermediary. So they process the transaction and then they send the money on to the host. But oftentimes there's payment issues. Like last year, there was a payment issue with Booking.com. And for over 6 months, hosts didn't even get paid. Which obviously, as you can imagine, if you're trying to run a business and not getting income for 6 months, that's a really big problem. So, you know, the third problem is fees. So both on the operator side and the guest side, somebody is paying, right? Usually it's a combination where there's a small fee on the host side and then the guest is paying most of it on Airbnb. But in aggregate, the fees are generally between 20 to 30%. So somebody is paying that. And whether that's the host side or the guest side, that's obviously a lot, right? Because if you're staying for a month somewhere or a week somewhere, or you're staying in an expensive city, that is a pretty significant amount. And I think with the way that the guest experience is right now, a lot of guests feel like they're paying this money and they're not really getting anything in return for it. So that was like the main problems that we wanted to solve: control, ownership, and then the cost.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think all of our minds, I always think this because I, you know, just being a growth guy over my career, people think in threes. There's a psychology of three, and, you know, it's like solving for three problems is always like, I always find very interesting and exciting because I think it's the most powerful. But I also, it is really to emphasize, I think, these three things, because they are major problems, as you mentioned. Not everybody knows about the problem of, say, for example, like host control, like, you know, knowing that Airbnb is publicly traded. I think a lot of people that are in the know these days know that when companies become publicly traded, things change dramatically. Like, their customer is Wall Street, their shareholders. That becomes their number one customer. For better or for worse, it's usually for worse. But, you know, if you're a shareholder, maybe for better. But, I mean, realistically, it's not better for the overall, the world as a whole. You know, everybody relies on the quarterly earnings. Everyone relies on what's next. And it's always about delivering on the share price. And, you know, we've seen that at places like Facebook. We've seen that at places, across the board. I mean, Facebook's just a perfect example. I mean, they obviously had to do a lot of interesting things on their platform in the past few years when their stock tanked. And they went strictly into mode of how do we increase share price? So they went from, just an aside, but I think, you know, we see these big brands and we can see it firsthand. And I use Facebook example just because it's one of the biggest social media brands still, whether you use it or not. Most people have enough understanding of all the problems that they've had over the years and how they, are always in the news for things they're doing to kind of keep their share price up and how that might affect their platform. So I think Airbnb is, you know, certainly had been in the news about some of these things too, but I'd say probably to a lesser extent. Maybe they've done better damage control, but overall, I think that's a very important thing that most people don't know about. I think what people do know about, you know, is the cost. And it's interesting, and I think that's like a major aspect, like you mentioned. I know, for example, well, even just payments, people out of the United States don't use booking.com a ton. They don't, in comparison to like Airbnb and VRBO, which have the bigger lion share in the United States. In general, payment issues at booking.com, from what I've heard and you just confirmed, is a big problem. Like there's a lot of problems they've had internationally outside of the US. And those are, again, not something everybody's going to know that's not in the industry like yourself. But the cost, the third one, definitely is one that I think we all see and experience. And I know that you have that clear on your website. And I think people do see that it's somewhere between 20 and 30% all in. From a host side, I mean, what are your estimates? I mean, I know it's a little fuzzy because clearly they don't tell you the percentages, right? Like probably exactly. But since you're a host, you probably have a better idea. I mean, what does that split look like? Like what is usually happening? Like how much is the guest typically eating of that part? And then how much is the host having to contribute to that, like that hefty 20 or 30% that's getting paid back to the platform?
So it really depends on the platform, and it depends on whether you're more of a casual host or what they consider a professional host. So somebody who runs a whole bunch of different properties. And then it also depends on your region. I can break that down. Like in North America, for example, generally, if you're a casual host on Airbnb, you're paying 3%, and then the guest pays somewhere between 13 to 17%. If you're a professional host, then you pay for the full 15%. And I think that's up to 30% in some regions. Like I think in Mexico, for example, you have to pay 30%, which is crazy. But what I think ends up happening is, regardless of what the host pays, the guest is always the one who ends up paying. Because even if the host is paying that 15%, for example, so they're technically paying the fee, they're marking up their prices by 15 or 20%, right, just passing that on to the guest. So at the end of the day, it's always the guest who's paying for it.
Right. That's huge. And I didn't want to go too far into the weeds, but I think one of the biggest things that, you know, I geek out on RWA stuff and I geek out on like how this affects real world impact. And I think solving for a big problem, and like, obviously you're solving for three problems that are, you know, comprehensive in this, that roll up into this solution you have for travel. But the, if you look at ways that you can solve for that money, you know, in decentralization, blockchain can solve for a lot of financial and inefficient mm-hmm. issues. And I think this, you know, to me personally, like that's, and again, I think that's how your user base, I know you have an extremely active community, very active Telegram, et cetera. And a lot of this does stem from that idea as someone that uses, you know, as an end user, how much more money you're paying for to get into the network of Airbnb and VRBO and booking.com. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
that I think it sounds like, you know, your customer base, a lot of it is driven from social media and these groups to really help drive this cost savings in the future as you start onboarding people. So yeah, I think we can obviously talk about how you're doing that now. I think that's probably a good transition point, but I really do love that you're solving for an existing problem that really exists. I think that's one of the biggest problems I do see, even though the acronym RWA is here and it's exciting. And, you know, we seem to be somewhat moving in toward a more of a bullish, market and where blockchain is accepted into, you know, into the real world applications. But I do see and do talk to a lot of projects that, you know, aren't necessarily quite clear on solving real problems where money, like where you can follow the money. And I think I think that's the most important thing right now. And I'm not saying that things that are fuzzy, that don't solve for financial problems are not going to work. I just don't see that right now. Like where we are in this movement of blockchain, it's very early. People want either cost savings or they want to have a yield. Like they want predictable income or they want to save predictably. And I think if you can't solve for one of those two things right now, it's very hard to raise money. It's very hard to gain users. Like, I think that's like where I see the business going. And just because I talk to a lot of people and, you know, it's obviously simple when you think about it, but I think that's, again, just commending what you're solving for, I think is a really key part of this. So yeah, let's talk about what the solution looks like, what the platform looks like. And, I'll let you kind of, do some more talking on that side of things.
Sure. Yeah, just to, I think, add to what you said, what we're seeing is this transition where, you know, in the past, probably like 5 years, we've had a really, really big focus on infrastructure, tooling, dev tools, protocol. But we're moving into this phase of like consumer crypto, real world assets, real world application. And, you know, projects that are especially in the RWA space, if they're just trying to target like Web3 users, which I still see a lot of, right? Because with RWAs, you still have a lot of people trying to target like Web3 natives specifically. But yeah, a lot of projects are trying to move out of that, especially in the DeepIn /RWA intersection. If you are focusing more on like either Web 2.5 or even just Web 2 users, because like you said, you're saving them money somehow, or maybe the experience is better than what they get in Web 2, you're building a much more sustainable business. Because like in the last bear market, a lot of projects who are relying on just Web 3 users and Web 3 development really had a tough time getting through the bear market, because they're relying on a market that's like very subject to like macro conditions outside of your control. But if you're a project that's focusing on Web 2.5 or even Web 2 users, then you have a lot more, you're immune to a lot of the market cycles that you would be otherwise caught in. So like for us, for example, a lot of our hosts actually know nothing about crypto, and it's not really important for them to know because they just love our product as it is. But for people who want to get deeper into it, then they love the aspect of us being decentralized, of us having blockchain rails, especially for the crypto payments, and hosts and everybody within the ecosystem getting ownership via the token, being able to contribute, etc. So like there's levels of I think participation and knowledge that each user can have based on what their preferences. Like, we don't force you to know about the Web3 stuff if you don't want to. It's there if you want to get deeper. We're kind of trying to slowly red pill you into going down that rabbit hole. But the product that we have is good enough that it doesn't really matter that it's Web3 or not. For somebody who is an operator, they're like, okay, great. It's simple. It does exactly what I need. It's modern. And like, I love it. And I think that's really the direction that all Web3 projects really need to go to, especially if they're in consumer crypto, because bear and bull market cycles are inevitable. It's like taxes and death, right? You can't get away from it. And so how do you build a project that is less subject to those cycles that you can actually get through them? And I think DPIN and RWA, like that intersection is really interesting because there's been a lot of analysis on DPIN projects who have actually come through the bear market a lot better than some of the other niches of crypto, I guess, because they were focusing much more on like Web 2 or Web 2.5 users.
Yeah, no, that's well said. I heard this recently from Natalia Proppy, and you know, they're building, you know, real estate side. And I think what's interesting, and it was just one of her kind of analogies, and this it makes perfect sense too, is similar to Netflix disrupting Blockbuster many years ago. Netflix didn't go straight digital. Like, they started just sending DVDs to your house. Like, that was most of their business. And it was like, hey, by the way, like, if you like this internet thing, like if you want to like go in here and watch movies on the internet, like it seems weird, but like try it. So, and then of course, obviously we've moved completely over there, but I think that's exactly, I completely agree with you. They're a good example of a project that's rooting specifically in Web2 users, just like yourself. And not only does it help you to avoid the death and taxes of bear and bull markets, but it's also, and bear them, but also you're building a network that obviously can sustain that. But also, I think that is just where the market is right now. The market is obviously in that Web2, Web 2.5 market. And making blockchain invisible is the most important part anyway, ultimately. Like, I know we can all geek out on this, and it's, I find myself sometimes overdoing it from a technical perspective as well. But the goal, like you said, and you said it well, is just to build with the blockchain in the background. You know, like, it's not an important aspect. And I think that's, talking about that, I think from the operator standpoint, I know you have some things I think we should talk about. Like, operators are able to onboard with a, you know, similar like with Airbnb, where they're able to have like an actual site and, you know, all of this stuff, which is very Web2 like. Like you said, you know, so I'd like for you to tell me a little bit about kind of the operator side, because I think the hosts at this point, like, that's probably your biggest focus, because I know you're just, you need to get hosts on there so you can create that network effect. So I'd like to kind of like talk about that first. I know the big problem is solving for the entire eco, as we already discussed, but I'd love to hear just about some of the key things you're doing differently and how hosts can get involved.
Yeah. So there's basically three main elements to our entire ecosystem that we're starting with. So the first is host or operator tooling. And we wanted to give hosts the ability to create a direct booking website or direct booking listing that they could then use and guests could book directly with them. So we're not in the middle of that transaction. Whether it's a fiat payment or a crypto payment, it's always directly between the operator and the guest. The funds always flow directly from the guest to the operator. We never touch those funds, and they get to keep all of their funds within their own accounts. And then we've basically built out all the tooling and infrastructure for that already. So that product is live. We call it Deep Travel Direct. We have a lot of operators already using it who love it. And so the next solution we're building out is a meta search. And so this is a discovery piece of it. We've built out the operator tooling where they have everything they need to run their business. And up to this date, they've been basically driving their own booking. So these are tend to be operators who are more professional in nature, and they really want to increase their business for peer-to-peer rental specifically. So they do use platforms like Airbnb and Booking, but they want to reduce that share and have more of it be direct. And so we're giving them the tooling, but obviously every operator, including myself, will always want help with distribution. And so we have a meta search that's coming out the Metasearch is basically an aggregator for direct booking sites and websites, and not just the ones that we power under DTravel Direct, but anybody who has a direct booking website. So we have a partner who is also another direct booking tool, and they're actually distributing all of their properties over to us. And so we'll continue to have these partnerships where anybody who wants direct distribution can connect to our Metasearch and have it show up that way. And again, all of those bookings will always be peer-to-peer, so always be directly between the operator and the guest. And that's how we're growing our ecosystem to bring in more operators on like a more scalable way. And then the third and really important piece, and this one is a very like big, hairy, audacious goal that we're working towards that will take much longer, but we're starting to build out some of the initial stages of this, is the data layer. So we've built out the Knight protocol, which underlies all of the products within our ecosystem. And the reason that this is really important is, as an operator, or even as a guest, when you're using a platform in short-term rentals, you don't own any of that data. So with Airbnb, for example, if they decided to ban my account tomorrow, I would have no recourse and I would lose everything. Alternatively, if let's say I decide tomorrow, hey, I don't want to use Airbnb anymore, but I've built up, 300 plus reviews and I have a 4.8 rating, that's all lost. And that's really such a shame because, it takes a lot of time and investment to build up credibility and a history like that. And there's really no reason that you should lose it, right? Because if let's say I decided that I'm going to create a VRBO account tomorrow, I should be able to take all of my credentials that I built, bring it over to another platform and be able to benefit from that. And that goes for both the host and the guest side, because if you're starting over from scratch on another platform as a host, then the guest doesn't know that you have reputation. And same thing, like if you're a guest and you're just starting to use a new platform, but you had a history somewhere else, you're not bringing that with you. And so there's a lack of trust on both sides that ends up wasting time. And you have to build your credibility from the beginning again, which I think doesn't make a ton of sense. The world that we're trying to work towards is, you own your own data, you can bring it wherever you want. And then as an operator, you can actually choose to where you want to distribute your listings as well. And this data layer will make it a lot easier for anybody who's building apps in short-term rentals to be able to build. Because what happens today is there's tons of API connections. So if I'm company A and you're company B, we're building literally the exact same connections to other companies and we're maintaining it and we're spending a lot of time and money on doing that. When it's really inefficient, we could just connect to one data source, which would be decentralized and an open protocol, get the same data, and then be able to benefit from sharing data as well. Because something that's a cost center today for you to maintain and to build, you could actually benefit from monetizing that data if you decide to share it. So this is a much bigger vision that we're trying to build out on the data side that will take a while, but we're taking the initial steps right now. We're the first users of the protocol and we're starting to onboard more partners as well.
That's amazing. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's definitely the future of, from decentralized IDs and decentralized data. Yeah, you're just doing that at a protocol level for operators or hosts, not their personal identity, but their property, which is their personal property.
There's like an interoperable play here too, right? Because for us, like as individual people, all of our data is siloed across every single platform that we ever use. And so there's no web of us being represented for who we are across everything. But imagine if, let's say, for example, let's say that you decide that you want to become an operator or a host and you've never done it before. So you come into the DTravel ecosystem, but let's say that you have this podcast, you've contributed to other projects, you've done a whole bunch of stuff, like that should count for something, right? But right now there's no way for us to actually cross-reference and have that knowledge graph of who you are as a person or your credentials in another ecosystem. So the way that I see it is like with the interoperability of blockchains, eventually over time, we'll actually be able to have these graphs that sit on top. And then we could call to say like, okay, well, you have, a lens profile. And so that means something. And that gives you some sort of credentials in the DTravel ecosystem. And I think that's really the beauty of decentralization and open protocols is for us to be able to have this interoperability, which is deliberately not possible today with all these siloed, you know, ecosystems, right, or companies.
For sure. Yeah. You know, obviously we know, I mean, data is you know, certainly like gold. You know, it's one of the most valuable things, which is why, you know, clearly it's a bold initiative, like you mentioned, what you're tackling. But ultimately, not only is it an asset to Dtravel, you know, for and a revenue source in the future. I mean, it's as you know, building it right now is not necessarily, it's more of a cost, you know, than it is a revenue source. But you're building that data layer ultimately, that the interoperability combined with the you know, distribution access, you know, people are going to be able to plug in, like you said, whether it's app developers or even, you know, people looking to onboard into your eco, it makes that a lot easier. Because as you know, like, that's one of the biggest things, the network effect can't be, you know, it's, there's a lot of, going back to my silly example of Facebook, you know, there's a lot of people that would say bad things about Facebook, but they still use it because they don't feel it, like they have any other options, because like they already have like certain friends on there or whatever, you know. So we already know, like, and your exact point of Airbnb, there's very commonly hosts that are disgruntled, that aren't happy, but the network effect has them feel victimized, essentially being able to do that. So you're giving that bridge, you know, that carrot, that incentive of getting people to kind of like put their toe in the water, like get into your distribution, you know, pipeline, so to speak. And like you said, it's in someone that doesn't do this business or doesn't understand this business may not realize, you know, how difficult it is to kind of get people to switch. But, and as you mentioned, distribution is everything. So most hosts are using multiple platforms. Like, they're not using one distribution channel. Like, exactly. So you're stepping in as a new alternative distribution channel. And obviously, going back to what you mentioned with your search, that's really the meta search, like that apps, that definitely, I see where that becomes a really important catalyst in your whole ecosystem, because you're able to essentially, you know, give people that like real time, in their face data that shows here's the pricing on this platform, you know, here are these properties available. And then they essentially can see pricing comparisons, right? Like, and just see what that's going to look like if they use Dtravel, you know, in the Dtravel application versus maybe Airbnb in that case.
And I think one really big difference that separates like Web2 ethos from Web3 ethos is that in Web2, moats and, you know, keeping people in a locked ecosystem is your competitive advantage. Whereas I think in Web3, even though with the protocol, like theoretically anybody could build another meta search that could be a competitor to Dtravel, like we're actually fully on board with that, because that means that whoever is building a meta search needs to make sure that the user experience is the optimal, like best user experience. And so you can't just rely on, okay, well, people are sort of locked within my ecosystem. They can't leave or don't want to leave because they have no other options. And so therefore, you know, I know that people are going to be unhappy, but that's okay. Instead, we're moving to this world where, you know, you need to provide the best user experience, the best customer experience for people to stay, because it's going to be very easy for people to build alternatives to what your solution is, because everything is open and permissionless. And I think that ends up actually having a much better user experience for everybody involved. Whereas in Web2, like you have, you know, like you said, like how many people actually like using Facebook? Probably nobody. But people are still on it. Like, I never use my Facebook, but I still have it because there's value within that network where if I want to connect with somebody, I can reach out. But it's not that it's necessarily a good user experience, because they've optimized for ad revenue so much that there's really no reason to even use it. I mean, same thing with Instagram. Like, when they first started, it was great to connect with your friends. But now when I open it and I never use it, you see more of like people that they're trying to get you to follow than you do of people that you're actually connected with. And so they almost become like a victim of their success, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, well said. I'm curious too, like just kind of talking about this, kind of the encapsulation of what we're talking about, like your ecosystem. What's been, I'm curious, just what have been any of the challenges of getting hosts on board? You know, have you had hosts that are very, very much interested in this kind of like fully decentralized side of things, or has it been have you mainly just been able to easily onboard people just as a new distribution channel? Like, what's been, have you had challenges in that area? I'm just curious, because I think that's obviously where your bigger, you know, the big initiative is right now is mm-hmm. building your network.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think like any startup, when you first start, there's a lot of learnings that you go through. So for us, our thesis was it's better to have like 100 people love you, like that concept of 100 true fans, than to have a whole mm-hmm. bunch of people like kind of just feel okay about your solution. So when we started, we just had a MetaMask Connect because we were like, we're trying to solve for, or we want to target the people who are like Web3 natives who also happen to be hosts and they just like fully believe in this decentralization model. And so we did that, but we didn't really get that many people signing up because that was just such a big friction point. So we kind of evolved and added an email sign in, and then we started getting a lot more people, and we started to change our language and made it a lot more approachable for people who wanted to use us more as a Web2 solution. And so I think we found this really good place where I think there's a lot of people who are using us just for the solution, but there's also seems to be an increasing amount of operators, whether it's because they're finding out about us or maybe now that Web3 and crypto is becoming a lot more well-known that there's a growing group of this, but there's a surprising number of operators who come to us and they're like, I'm really into crypto. Like, I love the decentralization. I want to accept crypto. I love what you guys are doing. Like, how can I use you guys? And so that group of people is definitely growing, but I'd say it's like half and half right now, where half right. the people are using us and they don't even have crypto payments enabled. They just like love our solution. And then the other half are all into the Web3 side. And now when we have this distribution, I think both groups are going to grow even larger, because when you have a solution where they have to drive their own bookings, it's obviously a lot harder. Like, there's very specific people that come in that we are trying to target. But with the distribution channel, because it's so easy, where they just create an account, create a listing, and then just kind of sit back and we'll help with the bookings, that's going to open it up to a lot more people who are looking for more of an easy experience, more similar to Airbnb than like a Shopify where they have to drive their own sales.
Yeah, that's a good reference point of even like Shopify, you know, like that's obviously an excellent reference point of a network that's proven, that's successful, but you know, you are on your own. Like, you know, it's powered mm-hmm. by Shopify, but there's 99% of those stores fail clearly just because it's not easy necessarily. So yeah, it is good. I like how you can see that. And I know you probably can appreciate that company being from Canada, you know, just the rise of Shopify, you know, like I've spent a lot of time working with Shopify and over the years. So like, I can appreciate that. Nice. I think very powerful e-com mm-hmm. platform. And I'm a big fan of just studying their success. I think they've done a really amazing job. And this is really a lot of how you're doing it. It doesn't mean it's bad that you stand on your own with Shopify. Like, there are they're the biggest e-com platform out there. They're not providing any distribution channels other than they're providing a platform that works. It's the best e-com experience out there. And people still sign up. They don't say, well, you know, you're not going to send me business. So I think it does prove your model. Like, if you really look at that, like, you know, I didn't think about it in that perspective, but I think that I just wanted to kind of noodle on that point real quick, because I think that is really an interesting way to look at like how DTravel success can piggyback on the success, you know, like of similar brands like Shopify. You don't have to create the next Airbnb. Now, clearly your success will drive a network, and you are doing that with this mm-hmm. meta search, and you know, you are focusing on that. Cause I do think that is clearly a, like you said, it's a way, it's a quicker path to red pilling people into, mm-hmm. you know, full exposure into your platform versus maybe just one distribution channel. So I do love that. I think that's excellent. Yeah, it's exciting. You really have thought about, it seems like all the verticals and all the psychology and all the things that are going on, you know, from a macro standpoint and just from a, you know, business 101 standpoint. So that's
exciting.
Well,
there's always, as I'm sure you know, there's always things that come up and always things to learn. I mean, like with Shopify, I think probably when they started, which was a long time ago now, they probably did have a lot of e-commerce operators asking them like, hey, how can you help us get traffic to mm-hmm. our you know, e-commerce site, right? But I think it shows how that industry, like the e-commerce industry, has also evolved, where people maybe started out not knowing how to drive their own traffic, but over time that industry has really matured and there's been a lot of resources and tooling, and even people's appetite for learning and wanting to take full ownership over that, I think, has changed. And so I see the short-term rental industry in a very similar way, where for a long time, I mean, the industry is still fairly new in its current evolution with it being tech enabled, like really 10 years. But even in that time, I think we're starting to see a maturity of the market where people are realizing that they just need to diversify their business overall. And actually, something that was interesting is Airbnb has experiences. So you can book an experience like a cooking class or something in a city. And they, I think, axed 50% or more of those experiences, like basically overnight. So they reviewed it based on the ratings, the uniqueness, and I think like the quality or something. But they end up axing like the majority of it. And a lot of those operators are like tour guides who have their own companies. And I think they were really upset because there was no notice, basically. So kind of very similar thing that happened over COVID, where they immediately had all these cancellations. They did this with experiences. And so one of the takeaways was, yeah, we need to diversify away. And so I think there's a lot of verticals where this is happening, where people are realizing like they really need to own the customer relationship. Because if you're using a platform, you're not the one who owns that relationship. So that's being applied to a lot of other verticals, which I think is good, because the more that people realize this, the more they're going to move away from centralized platforms that really are trying to take full control and have all the power.
Yeah. I know I keep going on tangents, but I completely agree with that. And I think that's a perfect example, just going back to the Shopify experience, is Shopify store owners, many of them rely heavily on Amazon as a channel.
Mm-hmm. And I hate it.
That's exactly. And it's a perfect example of that, where you're paying Amazon a lot of money, it's centralized, and you don't own the data. And it's a perfect example of you are relying on a network that you have no ability to, you can't leave because you have no ability to like talk to those people or communicate with customers in the past, in the future, that you did business with in the past. And like you mentioned, your data layer and all the things you're building will help to give that stability for a host to be able to be portable and to be able to have that, you know, reputation, you know, be existing across the web, which is great. So yeah, I think that's really is obviously where it's going. It's very early, as you know, and like you said, there's always learnings and always new things you have to implement, but and mm-hmm. learn from. But clearly, the thought process and what you guys have executed right now is commended for sure.
Thank you. That's very exciting. Really appreciate that. We're very excited. Yeah. We have a lot of stuff coming up. So
awesome. Well, I think we should talk about the token economy, TRVL. What I think that's everybody likes to hear about tokens. I think and not just from speculative, and I'm not saying it from that perspective. I think that the projects that are going to survive in these real world applications are going to be token economy type of projects. So I'm very much for that. I'm not for a lot of speculative gambling type of things, but when a token fits in an ecosystem that's well thought out like yours, I think it complements. And it really adds fuel to the fire for the growth. So I'd love to just hear a little bit more about, you know, your token, that how that fits into your economy there.
Yeah. So we have a couple of different utilities. One is payments, which is already implemented. So you can pay with TRVL on an operator site if they've enabled that as a payment. Rewards, obviously. So operators get a 3% give back right now, which is the same fee that we're charging. And then we're going to be introducing traveler rewards as well. We actually have a points program that's coming out pretty soon, where people who are contributing different things to the network, like booking properties, making referrals, etc., they can earn points that will lead to being able to earn TRVL rewards. And then governance is obviously another big one. And then finally, ownership. So one of the things that has always kind of, I think, been a lost opportunity especially with Airbnb, is they've managed to create this really amazing ecosystem where you have not just hosts and guests, but they've built all these businesses on the periphery, like cleaning companies, property management systems, property management companies. Like, there's this whole ecosystem of companies that basically support this industry, right? But
yeah,
despite the fact that they've been such a pivotal part of creating this industry, it's a closed ecosystem. So these companies and like these businesses are created not with the help of Airbnb, but almost like despite Airbnb. And I think that's really a lost opportunity, because every time you have an ecosystem and you're inviting people into the ecosystem and you're saying, hey, if you're bringing more people into the ecosystem, if you're adding value by contributing to it, then you're going to get rewarded. You're going to get ownership in that ecosystem. I think that allows the ecosystem to flourish and grow even bigger, because now you have these like crazy network effects that just become more and more flywheels. And if everybody feels like an owner, then they'll want to keep contributing, right? Whereas what I think is happening with Airbnb, and you know, I've felt like this for a while, is all these people who are contributing tons of growth to it, whether they're leading a community, whether they're building a business within the ecosystem, or building like a software company, you're not really getting anything for it. And in fact, like, it's becoming harder and harder to build and support the Airbnb ecosystem. And I think that's really challenging, because like, on the one hand, you have this company that's become public and they're making a ton of money, and like, you're trying to support the ecosystem, but you're not getting anything for it. And so that to me is like one of the most important parts of where TRBL fits in, is to reward people and give them ownership. So not only do they benefit from the growth of the network, but they also have a say in different things that are voted on. So over time, like, we're moving to this DAO model, but people will be able to make proposals, vote on proposals, and actually be able to drive the growth of the network, especially the protocol layer, which, you know, we need a lot of partners for that. And we don't want it to be something that we own or direct, but to have that be completely open and governed by a lot of people, because that's the only way that, you know, everybody's interest will be served, instead of just one person's interest or one company or one project's interest.
Yeah, that's great. I think that the token economy, with having those the incentives, like you mentioned, whether it's, you know, being able to pay with the travel token, that's obviously huge. You know, you can save also, you know, in addition to the savings that you're already going to see, which are substantial, you know, 3-5% versus 20-30%. But mm-hmm. you can also, in participating with the travel token, you can also save an additional amount, if I understand that correctly, right?
Like, yeah, so that's exactly.
Yeah. And then the host obviously is incentivized by receiving travel tokens. They want those, and you're rewarding partners that are coming into the ecosystem. Like you mentioned, obviously these big publicly traded companies don't, all these ecosystems, these sub ecosystems that are built underneath them are despite of that, and they don't, the shareholders, it's a inconvenience for them to mess with it, which is not, you know, not right, like you said, but it's just, you know, it makes sense for corporate America, honestly, you know, mm-hmm. like I can see why they don't want to deal with it, but it doesn't mean that there's not a massive network effect. And we see that with other platforms. And, you know, I mean, going back, I didn't expect this theme to keep coming up, but I think talking about how Web 2 solves Web 3 problems, but we know from Shopify as well, like, their partner program is one of the most significant of any large company. You know, they have the number of Shopify partners that support Shopify, they fully embrace. Like, they have a full certification program, all of those things, where those are kind of the tails of two coins. You know, you have mm-hmm. Airbnb that doesn't support any partners, and you have Shopify that's, you know, we're going to give you the best software, we're going to provide you the platform, we're going to provide you all the apps, all these third-party people, we're going to, like, literally give them the best platform they can to reach you and survive and succeed, not just survive, but also we're going to have a partner program where we're going to purposely drive success there as well. And I think that's, you know, yeah, I mean, I see a lot of those similarities in what you're building, like from a success standpoint, and from a brand that people don't hate. Like, I mean, you don't hear many people hating on Shopify, honestly. Like, you know,
right.
And I've spent a lot of time working with companies on Shopify and in this area. And as much as there are some frustration at times, I'd say like you rarely hear anybody say anything negative about how they built and how they've grown their ecosystem. So,
it's definitely that balance between like open versus closed ecosystems, right? People feeling like they have a choice, feeling like they have that support versus feeling like they're locked in just because there's no other options.
Yeah. So what did I miss? As we're wrapping up here, is there anything that we didn't talk about that you'd like to bring up?
I think this was a great conversation, very comprehensive. I think just reiterating some of the big things that we have coming up. So the meta search is coming up in the next couple of weeks. We also have a two-way Airbnb sync connection that we're really excited about. And we have the Point program, which we're launching in a couple of weeks. And then a couple other surprise announcements that we're very, very, very excited about. I can't really say anything, but there's a couple that are really huge that I think our community will definitely be super excited about, and hopefully more people will find out about deep travel. And when we launch the meta search, if you are looking to book travel somewhere, then I hope that people will come to deep travel because you'll earn rewards for booking. So, and become an owner in our ecosystem. You might as well get rewards if you're going to be booking anyway, and also save, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how all of that is major alpha. Thank you. And we'll stay tuned on some of your updates you can't provide yet. But I think even going back to one of the things you mentioned, which is not to be highlighted as the most important, but just the point system is actually a big deal. You know, going back to like bridging Web 2 to Web 3, what most Web 2 points programs honestly suck. And you know, you probably agree, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but like and a lot of people have discounted points programs for Web 3 because of their experience in Web 2. But Web 3 actually solves most of the issues that people have with points programs. So
right.
I think that's another thing that I would say that is quite exciting that I just wanted to point out, because I know sometimes when projects say, you know, we're going to be doing points or rewards, you know, people sometimes their eyes will glaze over, like, you know, and I just wanted to emphasize how much better points are when they're done through a Web3 mindset and a Web3 flow.
And, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, I do agree with
good. I was trying not to end with a controversial statement, but yeah,
I do think that's good. Yeah.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, Cynthia. Definitely a pleasure. I know that it's a little later where you're at, so I do appreciate you working this into your schedule, and excited to share this with my audience, and you know, keep getting the word out and keeping up with what you're up to. Love to have you back at some point, and we can continue the conversation and talk more about the growth at DTravel.
Thanks so much, Travis. This was definitely a lot of fun. Really excited to have our community see this as well.
Sounds good. Talk soon.
Thanks.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Real World Assets Show. Thanks for joining us on our journey to transform the future of finance, one asset and token at a time. For more insights, visit us on the web at rwa.builders. I'm Travis John, and I'll see you on the next episode.